This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never love a stone. You better learn your past, you better learn young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Jews versus Whites, Part 2. I'm reviewing the distinction between Jews and Whites here, but also how Jews regard themselves as distinct from Whites. And the asymmetry is that Whites generally don't distinguish Jews from themselves and instead think of them as white, lowercase white, you know, in a very diminutive sense. They think of themselves, Whites think of themselves in a diminutive sense that includes even Jews. I mentioned the last time Tim Wise, and it came to my mind that I had discovered at one point an article that Tim Wise had written back in 2000 where he actually declares himself a Jew. And it's important because Tim Wise is one of the most prominent anti-white activists out there. He literally makes a living doing anti-white activism, attacking whites for their whiteness. And the question inevitably comes up in any white person's mind, why does this man do this? You know, he claims that he's white. You know, he wrote a book, White Like Me. Well, it turns out he's a Jew. Biologically, it's supposedly only partially Jewish, and it's a question just how Jewish he is. It's probably at least half. But the simple fact is that back in 2000, he wrote this article that he starts off with the plain statement, I am a Jew. So when it comes to biology, he's at least partially Jewish, and in his mind, he is a Jew. He thinks of himself that way. And the reason it's important is because in this article, he actually goes into some detail as to why that's what that means in regard to whiteness and how his attitude about white is shaped by his Jewish identity. And he talks about how his grandfather had to metamorphose in Kafkaesque fashion into something one was not, a white man, when he immigrated to America. And he's referring there to a story, a short story by Franz Kafka called The Metamorphosis, where a man wakes up one day and he's a bug. He had changed overnight into a bug. So what Wise is describing here is his grandfather had to do something awful to become something he was not, a white man. This is his Jewish grandfather, by the way. And he talks, this is toward the conclusion now, that he actually gets to the point. He introduces his article declaring himself a Jew, and then there's a bunch of nonsense in the middle, and then the conclusion. That the two important points, of course, that when Jews write things, they tend to put the important stuff at the beginning and at the end, and there's usually a bunch of nonsense to make your eyes glaze over in the middle. And this conclusion gets to that point that Jews aren't white, and that this having to pass is a sort of insult. It's a bargain that his grandfather entered into to join someone else's club. And he also says here that this trade-off of doing this is part of the reason we cling to the model minority myth. Because of the self-doubt that this creates, the sort of identity crisis that this creates for Jews. And that brings me back to the word minority, which is where I left off the last time, contrasting. I was beginning to make the point contrasting minority and majority. The point I was making then is that it's part of the language that's used to attack whites and to set Jews apart. Jews are a minority, after all, and minorities are, like any non-white group, are to be protected and to be elevated and protected from offenses and crimes, whereas the majority is, by the assumption is that the majority is powerful and doesn't need to be protected. In fact, can suffer cost and harm, and it's less important that that harm and cost is inflicted on the majority. And that's just another way that Jews are distinct from whites, that Jews are considered a minority, whereas, you know, Irish, Italians, French, Germans, even when they live amongst in the United States, where any one of those ethnicities are literally a minority amongst whites, they aren't regarded as a minority. They're regarded as part of the white majority. And even as the white majority falls toward minority status, I think the only thing we'll see is a change in the terminology, that the, it'll fall into disfavor. They won't need to put down whites as the majority anymore. They'll just put down whites as whites. A clear distinction between the value of minority and majority and how that changes, how the effect of that word changes from place to place, and depending upon whether Jews, how Jews and whites are regarded, is Israel is a good example where Jews are in the majority, and the same rhetoric isn't applied to Jews there, or those who try to are identified as anti-Semites, you know, something horrible to say that that there's anything wrong with Jews being the majority in Israel, and Jews themselves assert that the Jews should do everything in their power to keep Jews a majority in Israel. And an even stronger one in the case of whites, contrasting that with Israel, the case of Jews in Israel, is South Africa. In South Africa, whites were the minority at a certain point and ruled South Africa, and this was considered illegitimate. It was considered immoral. And South Africa was divested, boycotted really by the Western world, by the Jews who control the West, made the case and succeeded in boycotting South Africa, and the white South Africans ultimately ceded power. Yet here in America, the Jewish minority rules. And part of the reason why they escape the same scrutiny that the white South Africans were subject to in South Africa is the whites in South Africa, first of all, visibly couldn't hide the fact that they were ruling and that they were white and very distinct from the population. Whereas the Jews in America lie about their power. And at the same time, it's pretty obvious that they rule. And you can read it in the papers every day. You can find evidence of it. That's pretty clear. On the surface, at least, you're not supposed to say that Jews rule. You're not supposed to say that Jews have even too much power in the United States, because that's considered immoral. There's morality of saying that white, there's too many whites, as I discussed the last time, is the morality there is that that's a good thing to say that there's too many whites. I mean, because you're only looking after the interests of non-whites and minorities by bashing whites like that. But if you say that there's too many Jews in power, or Jews have too much power, or too many Jews in any respect, that is considered immoral, because Jews are not white, because they're a minority, because Jews are Jews, and they're treated to a completely different standard. I also mentioned Jared Taylor and his attitude towards Jews in the last installment, and I have something more on that. I've been referred to a video where he gives he elaborates on his view towards Jews, and this is more recent. This is in April of 2013, after he had given a presentation. And a question from the audience comes that it's really more of an assertion that the Jewish question is very important, and you know, you don't talk about them very much, and but you can't understand why our people are stampeding like lemmings off the cliff without considering the Jews. And the, and specifically the fellow says the Jewish duplicity on the question of race, and that's how he ends it. And Taylor seems uncomfortable, and but not quite as uncomfortable as when he was on Donahue. He says that he starts off pretty good, conceding that yes, Jews are there's no question that they have had an aggregate impact that's overwhelmingly unfavorable on all of the questions that he had touched on in his speech. And I assume that it had all to do with the various problems that white people face, the attacks that white people are under. But then he says that his organization, American Renaissance, is focused on the racial problem, and that he doesn't think that you can afford to be a crank on more than one issue at a time, one of them, one subject at a time. And I think that's dishonest. It's either dishonest or ignorant to think that the Jewish question isn't a racial question. It's part of what I've talked about in previous installments, that it's this pretense that the Jewish question is somehow a religious question or a separate question entirely. It is a special question, but it is a really just a special form of the race question. If you can see race, then you should be able to understand that Jews, that there's a racial dimension to Jews. And that's why Jews are have such duplicity on race, is because they don't want anybody to be thinking about race. They don't, especially white people, because they've benefited very much from being able to live amongst whites and exploit whites by pretending that they're white. And so this issue about the Jews and the Jewish question is this is actually the crux of it, dealing with the fact that Jews are distinct from whites. And Jared Taylor sidesteps it. Another thing he says is that there are other places where you can learn about the Jewish question. And he says that, which doesn't really excuse him from not incorporating it into his view. I'm becoming less and less, that means less and less to me, this idea of you can go somewhere else to find out the real truth. But I'm just going to focus on race and not talk about the Jews. As I say, Jews are part of the race issue. He makes the ridiculous assertion that there are Jews that are entirely on our side. And that's, he says, entirely on our side. I don't know any. And I know of one that has been at his conferences. He brags then that many Jews have come and spoken at his conferences, Rabbi Schiller. And when you go and listen to what Rabbi Schiller actually has to say, it's clear that Rabbi Schiller is concerned about what's best for the Jews. He's not even concerned about what's best for white people, lowercase white, meaning whites plus Jews. He's only really concerned about what's best for Jews. And he sees that the liberal Jews that dominate, that their views dominate in politics and the rest and on race, might be bad for the Jews, in Rabbi Schiller's opinion. This is not a person who's entirely on our side. How could he be? He's not white. He doesn't positively identify as white because he's not white. He's a Jew. Taylor says, after making the statement about Jews being entirely on our side, he says one Jew that he knows said, "You cannot expect Jews to make common cause with people who want to kill them." I don't know of anybody in the Amran organization or whoever was in the Amran organization that thought such a thing. But why does Taylor see it from a point of view sympathetic to Jews to begin with? I think that that's a hyperbolization of the argument. And why does Taylor accept that hyperbolization? Why does he accept the Jewish point of view on it? If a Jew doesn't want to be involved in an organization that puts somebody else's interests, in this case white interests, above Jewish interests, then they can go off and form their own organization. In fact, why aren't Jews, if they're so pro-white, why aren't they joining Jewish organizations and trying to talk pro-white sense into those Jews? Why are they trying to join ostensibly a pro-white organization and instead turn it into a pro-Jewish organization? Well, that's the answer, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make sure that it's actually a pro-Jewish organization. The real question is, why does Jared Taylor side with the Jews on that issue? Well, he argues why is because he thinks you can find as many Episcopalians arguing against you as you can Jews, and just as vehemently arguing against you as you can Jews. And that may be his experience. But again, you know, talking about Jews in contrast to Episcopalians is the old, they're just a religion. The Jews are just a different religion pretense. On the point about the contrast between too white being a valid criticism in our current society versus too Jewish being an evil, stupid, crazy, evil thing to say, there was in the news last month, Hannah Montana, or Miley Cyrus, the entertainer, the popular entertainer, who's a young woman doing outrageous things, young white woman. She made the news this time for doing something that was a little too outrageous, and that was she said something about Jews. And the headlines sort of tell the tale. One read, Miley Cyrus, music industry too old, too Jewish to understand her appeal. What she actually said was actually very mild. It said, it's always weird when things are targeted for young people, yet they're driven by people who are like 40 years too old. It can't be like this 70-year-old Jewish man that doesn't leave his desk all day telling me what the clubs want to hear. That's what she said. Pretty simple. She was basically saying that old people try to tell her what to do, and she notices that a lot of them are Jews and characterizes it that way, that it's a 70-year-old Jewish man telling her what she doesn't want, what she should do, and she doesn't think that's valid. Another headline was Miley Cyrus anti-Semitic slip is showing, and that was in Tablet magazine, which cited Jody Rosen as an expert on Miley Cyrus. And this is a whole other subject, but Jody Rosen talks a bit about minstrelsy. Minstrelsy is Rosen describes it as masquerading, which has frequently served as a shortcut to self-actualization for white people from Al Jolson onwards. Well, Al Jolson was a Jew. She actually mentions that, I'm not sure, Jody Rosen, I think, is a man. Entertainers have understood and applied minstrelsy as a performative process by which whites, and in this case, in the case of Jolson, Jewish performers, could remake themselves as all-American pop stars. Well, in the case of Jolson, he was posing as white, and yeah, he was trying to appeal to an overwhelmingly white audience by mocking ridiculing blacks and wearing blackface. Whereas who is Miley Cyrus trying to appeal to here when she gets up and does this wigger stuff? She's trying to appeal to her Jewish managers who are trying to tell her what to do and appeal to blacks. I mean, she's not really trying to appeal to a white audience, and it revolts a lot of her white audience. So, you know, the situation is different between Jews and whites. Again, ironically, this same author, this Rosen, claimed that the whole criticism of minstrelsy of what Miley Cyrus is doing was because of all the black dancers on stage with her. Ironically enough, it's too black what Miley Cyrus is doing. That's what the problem is. That's what this minstrelsy means. And again, the double standards about, you know, something's too white, that's a bad thing. If a white's got too many black people up on stage with them, that's a bad thing too. It's like whites can't do anything right in this society. Another title of an article about Miley Cyrus, Miley Cyrus' shocking anti-Semitic remark. Shocking. You heard them. They're pretty mild. And a sentence from this article was, Miley has moved on to thoughtless racial comments. And I thought that was interesting because Jared Taylor may not realize it, but the Jews are different from whites in a racial sense. There's also a legal distinction between whites and Jews, and that I've already mentioned, protected class. That's the magic term that's used in constitutional law, and specifically in civil rights law. I wrote a blog post a long time ago. Well, it seems like a long time ago now. It was about 2-3 years ago, about a newscaster called Tom Burlington. The blog post was titled "Burlington Takeaway: Words Whites Can't Say." Burlington, to put it briefly, was fired from his job because he said "nigger," and it was in discussing a story where blacks in Philadelphia, I believe it was, were organizing a funeral, a mock funeral. It was just a call for news attention, for media attention, for the word "nigger," and they were going to bury the word "nigger," and they said "nigger, nigger, nigger, nigger" over and over and over again in their discussion of this funeral that they were going to have. And so in this meeting he had with his coworkers about what kind of story to do and how to do it, Burlington, in the privacy of the office of this TV station, said, "Oh, so I can say nigger." And his coworkers didn't like it. You know, he was trying to crack a joke. He was trying to be a wise ass. And they complained to the boss, and ultimately Burlington was fired. And then he brought a lawsuit against the station to get his job back. He claimed racial discrimination because he said his coworkers used the word nigger all the time. In that meeting, they were using the word. And here he turned around and used it, and he got fired for it. And that's a different standard for white people and black people. That's discrimination as he understood it, and as I think most white people would probably misunderstand civil rights law. His boss, a couple of interesting things about that case, his boss was a Jew. His name was Metlin. Metlin, who is Jewish, explained to the plaintiff that his use of the word was akin to calling someone a kike. And you wonder why, as a fellow quote-unquote white man, why didn't he say it's akin to calling somebody a cracker or a whitey or some other slur used against whites? Instead, the Jew saw himself having more in common with the blacks, with the niggers, than with the white man. Another thing that came out in the comments after I had made the post was, well, this idea of protected class was kind of new to me. I really hadn't explored the details of it previously, but I wondered to myself and out loud in a comment if Jews were considered a protected class. And sure enough, there was an article I'll link in the post here, linked there as well, titled "New Legal Tools to Fight Antisemitism." And the bottom line is that it's not part of the law that Jews are a protected class, but I'll get into that some of the details in a second here. But what this article in 2007, July 2007, was trumpeting was the fact that some lobbying group, some advisory group, had decided that anti-Semitism should be considered a legal tool in the that's relevant to the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And that, in other words, that Jews are a protected class or considered a protected class. And it goes further and says that anti-Semitism, that the same commission also recognized that anti-Semitism encompasses more than name-calling and threats, and sometimes it is expressed as anti-Israelism or anti-Zionism. So it's actually a pretty broad definition. It's basically whatever a Jew says they don't like ultimately where this is going. I went and I looked up the EEOC is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. This is a government, a branch of government that was actually created by the Civil Rights Law of 1964 as part of it, Title VII of that law, and having to do with no discrimination in employment. And they define the term discrimination and some related terms that I think is interesting. The term discrimination is defined as any act or failure to act impermissibly based in whole or in part on a person's race, color, religion, sex, national origin, age, physical or mental handicap, and or a reprisal that adversely affects privileges, benefits, working conditions, results in disparate treatment, or has a disparate impact on employees or applicants. And that seems clear enough, that statement of what discrimination is. But then you go in, and the very next definition in alphabetic order is disparate impact. Under EEO law, less favorable effect for one group than for another, period. Disparate impact results when rules applied to all employees have a different and more inhibiting effect on women and minority groups than on the majority. So here's that dishonest language about minority and majority. And here it's built right into the definition of disparate impact, which is part of the definition of discrimination. The idea of discrimination in an objective sense is that it applies equally to everyone. That's the whole idea. As if you have different standards for different groups, that's discrimination, right? Until you read disparate impact, and baked right into disparate impact is the discrimination between majorities and minorities, that minorities are to be protected and majorities aren't. And that's the lesson that came out of Tom Burlington's case, is that because he was a white man, a member of the majority, he wasn't entitled to a summary judgment as a protected class, had to basically try to convince the court that something else had been done that was wrong, because it wasn't racial, it wasn't a violation of the EEOC law, of the Civil Rights Act, because he's not a member of a minority. Disparate treatment makes it clear as well, and that's the very next definition in the list. Discrimination may result when rules and policies are applied differently to members of protected classes. So again, right in this single sentence it's self-contradictory. The discrimination between protected classes and everybody else. They get treated to different standards. And I think that's a basic misunderstanding that most lay people have that don't understand affirmative action, what that law is, and how from the very beginning it's been this double talk, really, that you shouldn't discriminate between different groups, and we're going to discriminate right in that very same law between protected and not protected. Jews also have a different standard, are treated to a different standard when it comes to endogamy, exogamy, miscegenation, mixed race mixing. The Jews encourage their children to not mix, to marry other Jews. And when whites do that, of course, that's called racism. Jews have a different word for miscegenation or race mixing. They call it intermarriage. And that's part of how they disguise it and get treated to that different standard. I'm going to have another installment on this, because there's quite a bit more I want to say about this. But let me summarize what I've said so far this time by saying, you know, basically Jews want to pass as white. They do pass as white. And they're free to live amongst whites. And, you know, by passing as white, they're better able to inform whites what to do as members of the white in-group. They say things like, you know, as an American, I think we should do this or that. Or as a white man, even, I think this or that, like Tim Wise. At the same time, they say openly that Jews are distinct from whites. They not only tell themselves that Jews are distinct from whites, they tell whites that they're distinct, that they're the victims of whites. They tell it to whites to manipulate whites, because Jews are parasites. You write a song.